This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis,
Scoop,
Sam Claiborne,
Winter Scoop,
and Jonathan Dornbush.
Charmed, I'm sure.
And we have got a great show for you this week. This is the final show of 2017, the last scoop. I gave you my heart, and the very next scoop, you gave it away. We're going to talk about we're going to share some holiday gaming memories. We're going to talk about Nintendo's next system, because it's time. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Today's GameScoop giveaway is presented by God of War The Lost Pages. In celebration of God of War, we're giving away a $100 PlayStation Store gift card for your gaming enjoyment. Just go to ign.formstack.com/forms/GameScoop_sweepstakes for a chance to win. I know, it's a doozy, but it's worth it. And be sure to check out the God of War podcast, The Lost Pages of Norse Myth, on iTunes and Google Play for official game lore and in-depth interviews with Santa Monica Studio. A new episode is available each month leading up to God of War's release. Back to you, Damon.
Okay, this episode is going to be all listener mail all the time, mm-hmm. because it's the season of giving, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it's time we gave back to our listeners for sticking with us for another year, and also, this is my second to last day in the office work, and I don't.
It's getting really quiet in the office. We're all wearing long sleeves because it's a little bit cold where we live now because it's, you know, the winter months, and Gummy Bears is playing in the lunchroom right now.
Is that what that was?
Is that true?
Okay.
I couldn't figure out what cartoon that was.
I've been eating a lot of cookies, and I'm getting ready to hibernate.
Yep. So our first email comes from Pete from Melbourne.
Hey, Pete. That's in Australia.
Australia.
Melbourne, yeah. Australia. Got it.
Pete says, as the year draws to a close and we choose our faves of the year, I thought for the final scoop of the year, I'd propose a little game. Mm. Looking back at the past decade of gaming, for each year, I'll throw you two highly regarded games. You need to choose one that you think deserves to be remembered in the gaming halls of history. Where are the gaming halls of history located again?
That's in Sacramento.
Okay, no, so not too far from you.
Yeah, it's the capital.
Akron, Ohio.
Here we go. Okay, so everybody understands the rules of the game?
Yeah.
Yes, a Sophie's Choice for every year.
I mean, I wasn't paying any attention. I'm assuming I'll pick it up.
You'll pick it up as we go.
This is going back 10 years ago?
Yeah, so 2007.
So we're not going to have to make the choice between Okami and Twilight Princess.
No.
Well, we already did.
Which was a tough choice.
We already did. No, we begin in 2007, and our choices are Super Mario Galaxy or Portal.
Oh, boy. Oh, that's very hard.
It's easy for me. It's Portal.
I think Portal 2. I think
just the first.
I think Portal as well, because that was something entirely new.
Yeah.
You know, Another Mario game is great. Portal was something mind-blowing and something we'd never played before.
One of my fondest memories, I mean, Valve was already, you know, one of the biggest developers in video games, Half-Life, one of the most beloved games of all time, but they weren't the Valve that they are now a decade later. We're just an absolute behemoth, you know, making billions and billions of dollars. So the Orange Box, right? That's where Portal debuted. They had these weird games. They had Team Fortress 2 and a new Half-Life episode and, you know, this little game called Portal. And they bundled them all up in order to have something to sell for $50 or $60. And Portal was the odd game out.
We call that, for that year, we called Orange Box a title to vote on for Game of the Year.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
So it was Orange Box versus... Yeah. Mario Galaxy, which is
not
Team
individual.
Fortress, so.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. For me, I love Galaxy. I like Galaxy 2 more. Hmm. So I'll give it to Portal because I can't imagine a world without Portal.
Yeah.
And puzzle games like that.
And you can't imagine a world without Mario.
There'd be other Mario games. Yeah. There are
Mario
other.
Galaxy.
Yeah.
Well, and so that's what I was getting at, is Portal was just such a surprise, came out of nowhere. It was this little thing bundled in as part of a big game collection, and no one knew. It just, it's very rare that you experience something that you're just like, it just completely unfolds in a way that's unexpected and new.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the cake and companion cube and stuff has become such a meme, but it was so crazy when you were experiencing it in real time. It was
great. GLaDOS is just the best character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great villain.
Of our century.
Okay, so let the record show that we have selected Portal to go in the gaming halls of history
in Akron, Ohio.
Yeah.
2008, Little Big Planet or Grand Theft Auto 4.
Oh man, people are gonna be mad in the comments. I don't like the Little Big Planet games that much.
Neither do I.
I think the controls in them feel really floaty, and I hardly even remember specifically how they play, but I remember a lot of weird stuff. Like, I think grab is mapped to one of the triggers, and
that's a weird.
I felt like I was always contorting my hands.
It looked amazing, though.
I'm not the world's biggest GTA 4 fan either, but I kind of didn't like Little Big Planet, so I give it to GTA.
Yeah. I agree. I've actually never really been interested in the Little Big Planet series.
I never could get into the creation tools. Like, I always felt it's impressive the things people have made from them. But for me, it was kind of just like I'd rather just play other levels people made and not really dive into it myself. Mm. Whereas GTA 4, that was actually my first GTA game. And so I explored every facet of GTA because of it through that game.
Well,
so
you're
for
a New
me,
Yorker as well.
Yeah. So I kind of loved seeing
You felt
this
right
weird
at home.
Yeah. Just the weird approximation. I'd be like, that's sort of like that street I grew up on.
Yeah. I think GTA 4 is a terrible game, and I would never select it for anything.
So you abstain.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Unless you're a big little planet.
I wrote a strategy guide for Little Big Planet, and it was really difficult, and so I have negative memories of that game.
I do think GTA 5, you know, they learned from, like, 4 is a landmark game in a lot of ways, but, you know, maybe not so much fun with, you know, the people calling you all the time, and even the odd, like, on-foot controls always mashing the X button. And 5 really struck that balance between, you know, being silly and letting, you know, gamers be gamers and play in the sandbox, but still tell, like, more of a realistic story. They absolutely learned from 4.
Yeah.
Nico's such a bad character in that game.
Yeah.
Bad because...
Why would I ever want to play as him? He's awful.
Like, off,
he's like a terrible
person.
Okay. Yeah. Like, okay. That's why I can't get behind a lot
you
of...
You often play terrible people in Grand Theft Auto.
But sometimes it doesn't take itself seriously. So like in Vice City... It's really funny, and it's like good campy. And campy, and
even again, going back to 5, they split those missions up. Like the rampage, just murderous stuff is all on Trevor, right? And then they have these other characters that had a little bit different kind of missions and different story arcs.
Yeah.
All right, 2009 is a good pairing. Batman Arkham Asylum or Uncharted 2.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. And,
yeah.
I think it's an easy one. I think it's Batman.
Oh, I give it to Uncharted.
Whoa, that's interesting.
I don't like Uncharted 2.
Oh, wow. Uncharted
2 is my favorite one.
It's also
my
favorite
Uncharted series a lot, but 3 is my favorite one.
Interesting. No, 2 is my favorite Uncharted, but the Batman Arkham series is a little bit more my speed of gaming.
And that one specifically is so Metroid-y. And I love how it takes place just in the asylum. Yeah,
it's the diehard rule.
The way it unfolds and the way it uses the villains is so smart and so fun. The final boss battle aside, like, it's sort of silly, but I think everything else in that game is so strong. Uncharted 2 is my favorite Uncharted, but even still, God, like, I love Batman Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, I would agree. But Justin, you would give this to Uncharted 2?
I do love Arkham Asylum. I like City a little bit more, but yeah, I give it to Uncharted 2. For my money, like big AAA, just like, you know, games that are the equivalent of summer blockbuster
with
movies,
Yetis in them.
With Yetis.
which I completely support. I think that's my favorite part about
more
it's
Yetis.
My favorite summer blockbuster style video game probably ever made.
Like, it has some of my favorite set pieces.
Yeah, just the ride that it takes you on is just perfectly paced and immaculate, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's a great game. 2010 is an easy one for me. Mass Effect 2 or God of War 3?
Mm.
And it's Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
In my mind.
I'm not a big God of War fan.
Yeah. Another easy one for me. Absolutely, yeah. Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite games ever made.
The 2 new, is my favorite Mass Effect.
The new God of War that's coming out next year is like the first one to really interest me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It looks like there's more than just, you know, hack and slash beat 'em up.
I love the first couple on a combat level, but as it waned on, like, it didn't really hold my attention. That one looks like it could from many levels, but yeah, for me it's Mass Effect.
You know, you might be surprised, Damon. The original God of War does have like puzzles, like you're pushing and pulling blocks and solving environmental puzzles and sort of figuring out your way through the environments as well. It's a little bit more balanced than I think some people that, you know, just haven't spent a lot of time with the games maybe think it is. So
Kratos is not a compelling character either.
Mm-hmm.
The monsters are really well designed.
That's true.
Yes.
I like the monsters. And then 3, they get really big.
Yeah. There's some good like cinematic moments in 3.
Attack their faces.
Of course, yeah. But
it's very violent.
A big RPG with great characters like Mass Effect 2 that you can really dig into. It's just more my kind of game.
Mm-hmm. It was, you know, the Mass Effect series actually continuing all the way through Andromeda gets more and more action-oriented each one. And then 2, to me, sort of struck just the right balance between, you know, 1 was very RPG, right? And then 2 is right down the middle of, like, RPG and, like, action shooter game. And, I think it's really wonderful.
Who are you paired up with in 2 mostly?
Well, the whole game almost is recruiting.
Right.
You know, the bad things happen to you at the start of the game, and then you get sort of regather your crew or gather
but
a new
Miranda
crew.
But Miranda is there the whole time, right? Is that her name?
Yeah. The Yvonne Strahovski's character?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think Sully isn't in it as much.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
I really like the characters from Uncharted 1. I like when they reappear in 3 and 4.
Wait, we're talking about
Sorry. Yeah. I thought you were talking,
talking about Mass Effect.
Yeah, when you said Sully, I was like, I'm not.
How did we get back to Uncharted?
I'm like, Sully?
Because he was talking about Uncharted right then.
Was I? I meant Mass Effect. If I said Uncharted,
I thought you were talking about Mass Effect. Yeah.
Oof. We're all
confused. That was mixed up.
There's free cider in the kitchen.
Yeah. And wassail?
Yeah.
Wassail?
Wassail?
Yeah.
Wassail? I like it. They say at Mystery Science Theater, they say wassail, but I've heard wassail.
Yeah, well, we actually just have a jug of, it's printed, it's spelled, it looks like it's printed wassail in the fridge. And I wish I didn't know it was its own, it's its own holiday thing. Beverage.
Huh. Spiced cider with booze in it.
I've been taking pulls directly off the jug. I hope nobody minds.
No, it's fine.
Do you hold it on your shoulder?
Like, yeah,
glug,
of course.
Glug, glug, glug.
Let's move on to 2011. Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword or Skyrim?
It's clearly Skyrim.
Yeah. Of the Sky games.
A lot of
Skyrim.
These are very easy. Yeah. Obviously, no, maybe not obviously, but for me, it's definitely Skyrim.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of love for Skyward Sword myself.
Skyrim
was a pretty style.
I associate, as we all do, you know, specific games with specific times in my life. And I was pretty new to IGN when we got Skyrim in the office. And that was the first big, like, massive AAA game that, you know, people were playing and experiencing together as a staff. And that game has definitely stood the test of time, right? It does look and feel old now, but it took, like, years. Like, even 2014, 2015, you know, other 3 or 4 year old games, you know, were starting to feel clunky and starting to age and people had moved on. But Skyrim, man. People just stuck with it, would reinstall it, and spend another 100 hours with it.
It just got re-released on Switch. Like, it's still relevant.
And in VR, right?
Yeah, in VR as well.
Yeah, Skyward Sword came out at a time when I actively disliked the Wii, and I did not want to waggle my way through anything.
Sure.
And I think also the Zelda series, just at that point, has sort of gotten away from the open exploration.
Yep, there's so much to say about that game that's positive, and, you know, I don't want to, you know, overlook those things. Like, the dungeons are really interesting.
Yeah,
it's kind of the last Zelda game that had those interesting full dungeons, so that's nice. But it's not
when it inevitably,
it's not the Legend of Zelda to me.
When it inevitably is re-released, I'll give it another shot.
I don't know that it is that inevitable. The motion controls are really baked in. Like,
Well, but that's
true.
You can still, you know, the Joy-Con still have motion.
That's
controls.
True. I mean, I've thought about this on. I keep meaning. I feel like I brought it up on Scoop months and months and months ago. I want to write an op-ed about, you know, games that are motion control heavy that are really good. And it's like, are they ever going to get off the Wii? Like, are we ever going to get another chance to see some of these games?
Boomblocks. You can play Boomblocks with Joy-Cons.
The Joy-Cons. Yeah.
Boomblocks is so great. We played that one Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we did. That was many moons ago.
Yeah, might have been 2011.
If Skyward Sword only had like a big cloud ocean that was interesting and had more than 3 places to land.
Yeah. I like
it could
the
have
way,
been a cool game.
I like the relationship between Link and Zelda in that game. Like, I think it's an interesting take on that for sure. Yeah. But yeah, in terms of that overworld, that
and,
sort of
Fi, is that her name?
Fi?
I think
Fi?
Yeah.
However you pronounce it.
Fi.
Yeah, I actually never played Skyward Sword because by the time it came out, I had lost my Wii IR. since. Yeah. My Wii was still hooked up, so I could play games that didn't require the pointer. But if you had to use the pointer, I couldn't do it.
If you just put up two candles by your TV.
Yeah,
you could do the two candles. And then in the office here, just in any bundle of wire that you find behind a desk, there's one of those tangled.
Yeah. It's actually
thin wire, and it's so much longer.
It's mandatory that in every cable nest, there's a Wii IR sensor.
It's really funny.
Do any of us still own the Wii balance board?
Yeah, it's under my couch.
No. Under your couch.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Because, nothing else is under the couch. I haven't. Maybe it's been moved now.
Maybe some of Rocket's toys.
I just haven't checked. Yeah,
my mom does.
There are a lot of cat toys.
She still plays that stepping game almost every day.
Yeah, that's. We can't own round cat toys now because our cat always just loses them under the stove or the bed.
Yeah,
it's like that's not useful for me.
Or the cat.
Mm-hmm. 2012 Journey or Xenoblade Chronicles?
Journey.
So Xenoblade Chronicles, I never played that one. I guess that was a Wii game. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
2012, not a Wii U game?
Big Wii open world RPG.
There was a big Wii open world RPG. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I have to abstain. I didn't play Xenoblade.
I didn't play Xenoblade either.
I've only played a couple hours of it, but
it's an interesting choice.
Journey is one of the most emotional experiences I've ever had with a game.
You and Bong Ripper 420 climbing that mountain.
Oh yeah, no, I loved when someone just jumped into my game. Bong Ripper, whoever you may have been, my good friend.
That game was kind of tainted by working here. I think people talked it up way too much. Okay. And then I played it, and I was like,
Are you talking about Journey?
Journey. Yeah.
I had the exact same response. I played it for the first time this year when it was a PS Plus game.
Oh wow. Okay.
And after all that time, I was like, that's it.
Yeah,
that's it.
Oh. That's a problem, though. Your expectations are set too high. You can be disappointed by anything.
Yes,
that can happen with movies and games and everything. And that absolutely happened here in the office.
I could totally see that. I remember I read the IGN review. Was like, I need to buy this game, and then just played it through.
Yeah.
In a night, and still I can remember playing it like clear as it happened yesterday. Like I love that experience.
Now the Journey arcade game I really like. It's based on the band Journey, the first game to ever have scanned faces in it.
Digitized.
Yeah, and it plays Don't Stop Believin'.
Yep. A very accurate recreation of.
Well, it has I don't know. I can talk about this all day. It has a cassette tape in it though with a live concert that plays if you beat the kind of cycle of levels.
It's a very cool old arcade machine. 2013 is a very interesting one. BioShock Infinite or The Last of Us?
Mm.
Ooh.
Hmm. Well, I'm not wild about either of those, is another one that people are going to get angry with me for.
We know the IGN audience loves The Last of Us.
Well, and the staff. It's a beloved game, amongst critics and commercially. To me, Last of Us is too oppressive and... I've tried playing it 3 or 4 times, and I get maybe 5 or 6 hours in, and the sneaking gameplay and just like throwing bricks. I feel like I've spent that whole game throwing bricks. And I'm being very, very reductive right now. Like, I understand what it's doing from a storytelling perspective, but I just, it's evening. I want to play a game. I can't bring myself to pick that up, and that's what I want to spend, 2 hours with. And so I keep meaning to go back to it.
Yeah.
You like BioShock a lot, right?
I love both of those games. BioShock, I played them actually both back-to-back in that year. I remember very vividly. It was like a 2-week period where I just played both of them. I love the beginning and end of BioShock Infinite, and I think that's the game it wants to be. Mm-hmm. And then it crams a lot. I don't hate the shooting as much as a lot of people do for that game. Like, I thought it was fine. But
I agree.
Very much the middle stretch of the game, I think, loses its way and has a couple really bad boss battles. But... Mm-hmm. Last of Us, for me, just the complete experience. I play it like once a year ever since it came out.
And the winter part is unbelievably
good. Yes, and especially with the Left Behind DLC included in as part of the story. Just it's such an affecting emotional experience for me.
That's the mall
one
you're
playing.
That's so
good. Yes, it's so cool. And
I don't think we can count that, though.
No, but just the base game itself.
It really doesn't matter.
You can do whatever you want. I think when you get to winter and the shock of that, even still playing it through on the fourth time, still hits me every time. Yep. And I love the way it plays with the idea of player choice in its narrative and forces you to be like, no, this is the story we're telling. And I do love the gameplay. Like, I love those scenarios, and I actually do like figuring out the combat like it's a puzzle in many of those scenarios. So for me, The Last of Us would be hands down the choice. But
yeah, it's tough. I don't like a lot of things about BioShock, but man, the music was so clever and awesome in that game.
Yeah. Yeah, I like a lot about that game.
And the covers are so good.
It's so cool. And then how they like tie it to the kind of the plot of the game and why that's happening.
Yeah.
And then I like the fantasy creation of that more than the gritty earth of Last of Us.
Sure. Yeah.
But like, as we were just talking about Last of Us, I'm remembering like how much quality that game had.
Yeah. Yeah. That every season to me has
maybe it's like a better Netflix show than it is a game, though. I can't tell.
Yeah, it could be. I'll let you know after my next replay.
No, I think BioShock Infinite has such a great opening. when you first arrive at Columbia and when you meet Elizabeth.
You're on like those skiffs going between the islands.
Yeah, everything through where you make your escape from the, what's the bird guy's name?
Songbird.
Songbird, yeah. The first time you make your...
playing the Beach Boys.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's awesome. So. Yeah. But I agree, Jonathan, like it dips in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's like the first third of that game is really, really strong.
Yes, yeah.
And then it has a bonkers ending. But I've beaten that one and I've never beaten Last of Us. Kind of like Justin, like I've picked it up a couple times, but I've never felt compelled to play through it to the end.
That game's interesting because if you don't like the gritty dreariness, it is like three quarters of the game. Yeah. But then it really changes at the end.
Yeah, I've heard that many times. And I like,
but it's not probably not worth the investment if you don't like the rest of it.
Yeah,
it's not that. It's not that I'm like actively rejecting the game. It's just like kind of like Justin said. At night, at 10 p.m. when I'm like, okay, now it's time for some games. Yeah. I just never feel like reaching for The Last of Us.
It's not the type of story you unwind your day with.
Yeah, no, which is usually when I play games.
Do you want to wade through, you know, garbage under a high school in a bombed out suburban neighborhood?
No, usually I pick Spelunky. 2014, Bayonetta 2 or Shovel Knight. Some of these seems very random sometimes.
Yeah.
Those are the takeaways from 2014. What game do we give?
That's what I was just trying to remember.
Is that Dragon Age Inquisition?
Would have been that year. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was Shadow of Mordor that year, too.
Shadow of Mordor and Inquisition.
A few other games. Yeah.
Nice.
Well, we got Bayonetta 2 or Shovel Knight.
Between those two, it's Shovel Knight.
Me too. Yeah. I never even played Bayonetta 2.
I played the beginning of Bayonetta 2, but I don't like the Bayonetta series.
Yeah. I played the first one, and it was like, not for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But now we're getting Bayonetta 3, and I'm happy for the people that like that series. 2015 is Undertale or The Witcher 3.
Oh.
Very similar games.
Those were the same year?
Yeah.
Paulie and Miranda were here.
This is a hard choice.
Yeah.
Man.
Oh, boy.
Full disclosure, I have still not played Undertale myself.
Okay. I've only played a bit of The Witcher, so I don't know if I feel fully qualified to...
I've played the crap out of both those games, and The Witcher is easy win for me.
I think I give it to Undertale. Wow. I think The Witcher felt more... I mean, it's such a weird apples to oranges comparison. Yeah. It's like comparing...
Did you beat The Witcher?
No, but I played 25 hours
of it. Did
you
get to Skellige by any chance?
That's where I stopped, was I was just going there.
That's
why
I
know that's the area you
love that, yeah.
For me, it's like comparing... It's like trying to review... a really good vine in the same then say, do you like that more than The Last Jedi? It's like, I don't know, man. Like, how do I compare the two? But The Witcher felt a little bit more conventional, even though it's really, really huge and, you know, well done as an interesting story. Undertale, I put a premium on games that show me something I've never seen before and a style of gameplay I've never experienced before. And being able to go through that game without ever fighting anything and what it does with, like, combat systems, like dodging, like it's an RPG, but it also has like bullet hell dodging in it in every single combat scenario, and the way that changes the story and the music and the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Ooh, boy, Undertale is very, very good
and
very unique. And so to me, I give it the edge. It's like, I feel like it's one I'm going to remember more a decade from now.
2015 was a good year. I would like to write in Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh my gosh.
That year.
Was that?
What a game.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That's not, not in the mix on there.
Also, it could have been Fallout 4 that year. Another game which
I feel like
immensely loved.
I want to go back to 2014 for a second. Everyone bags on Dragon Age Inquisition, and it was like they roll their eyes when they see it. That was game of the year. Like, that game is excellent. Like, everyone's like, oh, it's nothing but fetch quests, but they're only remembering, I don't know. It's just a pet peeve of mine.
Well, people don't talk about that game. Like, a lot of the games of the year over the decades, people still talk about, like Okami.
They point to, Sam, you played that whole game, the little shards that you collect all over the world.
I can't remember what they're called.
And people point to those as like, oh, that game's nothing but busy work. And I'm like, that game is full of like, you know, expertly voice acted.
There's an entire castle sim in the middle of the game.
Yeah, and like you can have an hour long conversation with an NPC where you banter back and forth. And
what
like
I think that game's about is recruiting a team. That's what I think about my time with that. And I always like that about Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
And that you're going around and like you can miss an entire character.
Yeah,
I remember like how cool it was to think like, man, I was in this area for hours and hours and never even did that quest to get a whole member of my team.
I was like absolutely enamored with Dragon Age Inquisition, and I don't know. I'm frustrated that people take away, like, they do add this
once
busy work on
to
top
cheat,
of it.
I stopped playing.
If you ignore that busy work, there's still 60 hours of incredible, polished, beautiful game.
There's some open parts of it too.
One day I'll revisit Inquisition, I'm sure. Okay, finally, 2016. Inside or Stardew Valley?
Mm.
Easy choice for me.
Same.
I have to abstain. I haven't played Stardew.
You say same, but it's going to be different.
I'm sure my favorite would be Stardew because I don't
Stardew for the two of me. I haven't played a ton of Stardew.
I'm the only inside lover up here.
And you've played Stardew?
No, I haven't played Stardew. Yeah. But I just know. I know. I know I would prefer Inside.
Inside just didn't grab me as much as I hoped it would.
You have the journey problem because people built it up. It really
was the first couple weeks that everyone was talking about, and then I got to it maybe a month after. And I just, having loved, why can't I think of the
Limbo?
Limbo, thank you. I loved Limbo, but playing this, I was like, all right, yeah, that was sort of a similar experience. And
I'm in the exact same boat. I did love Limbo. Wasn't as wild about Inside and Stardew Valley, man. Like that, the loop, you always talk about like the gameplay loop in like games like SteamWorld, like the gameplay loop in Stardew, and even it being set up in days, you're always like, well, I'll play one more day, or my crops, there's always something the next day to look forward to. It's so peaceful, and I don't know, man. Like, it's you say you know you would love Inside more, but you might be surprised.
I'm sure I probably would like Stardew Valley.
There's
I would like to check it out at some point.
It's like a 50-floor dungeon.
A bizarro puzzle platformer with a sick sense of humor is definitely going to be more up my speed.
Cool. I don't know, man. Like, you spent all that time in Disgaea item dungeons and stuff. Stardew might surprise you. You should check it out on Switch.
I will. It's in my list of games I plan to play sometime.
I'm so excited this winter break. If we're traveling, we can bring a Switch with us now.
That's why the Switch is the greatest console of all time.
I'm going to play Stardew Valley. Like, I'm so excited to like sit, like avoid, you know, any family agony and sit in another room and play the Switch. I don't even have to like occupy a TV in somebody else's house. Yeah. I can just play that.
That's great. Speaking of the Switch, next up we are going to help a new Switch owner decide what games to play on his brand new console. But first, one more word from our sponsor, and I promise this is the last one.
Today's GameScoop giveaway is presented by the companion God of War podcast, The Lost Pages of Norse Myth. Each month, hear new official lore on creatures, weapons, realms, and in-depth interviews with Santa Monica Studio. Check out a quick preview from episode 1, Odin and the Knowledge Keeper. And be sure to go to ign.formstack.com/forms/GameScoop_sweepstakes for your chance to win a $100 PlayStation Store gift card.
Disastrous visions. She saw the worlds plunge into a bitter, 3-year winter. She saw the sky split, and the realms begin to tremble and quake. She saw a horrible terror emerge with a flaming sword and an enormous, beastly wolf rampaging across the countryside as he grew to consume the very sun. She saw the deadliest of monsters and the worst of gods at each other's throats. And, in the events leading up to it all, she also saw a pale, white ghost from a distant land and his young son, somehow intertwined in this terrible prophecy.
Okay, next up we've got Dave Cameron from County Waterford, Ireland. And he says, longtime listener, first time writing in. I'm getting the Nintendo Switch from my lovely and better half over the Christmas holidays, and I've already gotten Zelda and a Pro Controller to start me off.
Nice.
Aside from Mario and Mario Kart, which other games do you recommend I get? I know there seems to be a ridiculous amount of titles released already, and I feel so stuck for choice as a result. I travel every week up and down the country, so I'm wondering what games would be more ideal for playing on the go.
That's perfect.
So he's got Zelda. Yeah. He's going to get Mario Kart.
SteamWorld Dig 2.
SteamWorld Dig 2.
Yeah.
And let's describe this game for him. This is kind of a Metroidvania, 2D action platformer Metroidvania with lots of digging and a very satisfying gameplay loop, like we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Where you're collecting resources, digging down.
But if you die, you lose those resources. Yeah. So you have to kind of do the risk of, can I get to a portal out of my hole?
Yep.
Which you can dig down to these portals.
Yeah.
And then you can use that with all your treasure, or you might die and lose all your treasure.
And you have limited light as you're going down. So you have
risk
to
versus reward. Do
anything.
I keep digging, try to make it to the next checkpoint, or do I head back up?
Yeah, it's very much
my loot.
Like the earlier Castlevanias in the century had that same thing, where you'd kind of push further and further to like a save point.
Yeah.
And you might get there and it's really exciting. And if you don't, you have to go all the way back to your first save point.
Yeah, exactly. So that's SteamWorld Dig 2. I would also highly recommend Mario plus Rabbids.
Yes.
Kingdom
Absolutely.
Battle. Big surprise this year.
Yeah.
It's It's one of my favorite games of the year.
Turn-based strategy game, kind of XCOM light, I would describe it, but a totally challenging game, like not a like a baby game at all.
No, yeah, it has a little bit of a difficulty spike towards the end that I know has put off some people.
Yeah, it definitely really like, it's really hard.
But I love sort of figuring out the team you want to use correctly and manipulating the powers in the right way, because you can chain off of each other to create so many attacks, and before you even finish a battle, like you can do it in one turn when it can actually take like 6 turns. Like there's a lot of variation to the combat, which I love
for sure.
Yeah.
It's a very clever game.
Specifically for portable play, Stardew Valley is wonderful for that.
Yeah.
You know, because it is on these fairly, like, each day is fairly short, but the game is just hundreds of days, so it's easy to pick up and put back down. Really appropriate for portable.
And that's a Harvest Moon-like farming sim, but with
you start your own farm, and then there's a little bit more RPG elements than that. So a nice sim RPG. And I would put Golf Story in that same bucket as well.
I still need to check out Golf Story.
And if you're playing by yourself, only avoid arms and avoid snipper clips.
Yeah.
Because those games aren't great by themselves.
And maybe Splatoon.
Yeah. But if you are and playing with someone else, I totally recommend snipper clips.
I think snipper
especially clips with the DLC that's in there now.
For when you you arrive home from your travels to your better half, you can play snipper clips together.
And Mario's totally a good bite-sized game too.
Oh, Mario. Yeah, Mario's probably pick it up, get a couple moons.
It's probably better than Zelda as like bite-sized.
I think so too.
But if you're on a three-hour plane ride, I'd rather have Zelda.
Yeah.
Mario feels, I mean, Zelda did come out on the Wii U, and Mario feels designed with the Switch's portability in mind to a much greater degree.
Yeah, I think so too.
What a great console.
Great console.
Oh, yeah.
There's more and more this week and next week, the console, or last week and this week rather, there's been an indie explosion where we talked about it on the show last week. Like, we speculated that maybe some games have been held up in cert, and then that resolved itself, or something seemed to have happened, because we went from a trickle of games to just dozens and dozens of, like, you know, Enter the Gungeon.
Yeah, Enter the Gungeon's out now, which is, it's not a top-tier roguelike in my mind, but I had a lot of fun with it. It's not like Spelunky or Rogue Legacy level, it's cool. It's
a fun Zelda clone, like, it looks like Link to the Past, called Blossom Tales. It's like a top-down Zelda game, just dozens of them. Like, Battle Chef Brigade.
Battle Chef Brigade.
Other ones you might have missed, like Axiom Verge and Oxenfree are both on it now. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then out today, which I was telling Sam about, Crawl.
Yep.
Which is local multiplayer dungeon crawler with cool pixel art, where I think it's for 4 people. 3 people are the monsters, and 1 person is the adventurer, and your friends are like trying to you know, kill the adventurer.
I love that idea.
Really cool.
Yeah.
You can almost always, not always, but most of these games hit Steam first. So the one that I just name dropped, the Zelda clone, like sure enough, like it was on Steam earlier this year, last year, and you're able to see like, oh, was it well received or not?
Yeah. And it's Blossom.
I think it's Blossom Tale. I hope I'm not misspeaking, but just poke around. Like, hey, is Oxenfree for me? Take a look at the reviews from last year.
Yeah. Enjoy the Switch, Dave Cameron from County Waterford, Ireland.
I'd love to go there.
This is Christian Sarmiento from Sweden.
I'd love to go there too.
Sounds like a Swedish name, but he says, love your show. It's a must every week while commuting, flying, or doing the dishes. Ha ha. Why is he laughing? Why is he laughing?
The first few things were so epic, and then also doing the dishes. Yeah,
maybe. He says, I recently bought a Nintendo Switch while being on a layover in Chicago. I'm a steward, and I got a much better deal than in Scandinavia. Mario Odyssey.
Really cool.
Mario Odyssey was my first purchase for the console, and I'm completely in love with the game. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, everyone keeps talking about Zelda. I played Twilight Princess back in the day when Wii was a thing. My question is getting Breath of the Wild a good idea for someone who hasn't been into the whole Zelda universe, doesn't really know the whole story? Can you, as a new gamer, grab the game and still be sucked into the fantastic world of Hyrule? Keep doing a good job. Well, first of all, I plan to keep doing a good job.
Yeah. Well, so you weren't planning on it.
I've just decided.
But since Christian asked us to.
Since you asked so nicely, okay, I'll keep doing a good job.
Zelda's a standalone story and even standalone gameplay. It's its own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't need to play anything else.
Yeah. It's kind of a revolutionary title in the series that's sort of like reimagines exactly what Zelda is. So you don't need to have
start
played.
Start here is what I would say.
Not just from a story perspective, but as Sam said, a complete, you know, rethink from the ground up of what a Zelda game should be and how the gameplay should operate.
Yeah, so I would say, Christian, instead of like thinking like, is Zelda for me, just think about, you know, the game is a gigantic open world sandbox, you know, fantasy adventure game. So if that sounds like fun to you, then you're probably going to like it.
I mean, I've talked before on Scoop about how I feel a little paralyzed. Like, I don't want to play SteamWorld Dig 2 until I play 1. I don't want to play Wolfenstein 2 until I play 1. And it's not just for story continuation reasons. It's also just to see, you know, how the gameplay evolved and what they improved and just follow, like, the arc of a franchise. I don't like to jump in the middle. And even with that in mind, with Zelda, it's completely appropriate to start there. Like, you don't need to have experienced what came before if you've never been a Zelda fan.
Yeah. You'll obviously, like, appreciate the changes they've made or the remixes they take of older characters or themes and things like that. But there's so much new in this iteration of Zelda that I feel starting here is not a problem whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't think so at all. I finally got around to the Champions Ballad DLC last night a little bit and just did the first temple, the one that's the closest to the Resurrection Shrine. And I thought it was really fun. It took me like several tries to make my way, to defeat all the enemies and then get into the temple. But it was totally fun and satisfying. And that temple is really cool, really clever.
Okay. Yep, I'm deep into it.
I haven't played it yet.
Justin doesn't like it. Did you unlock the first temple? Like,
I did a few of the temples. Yeah. I know the whole thing's not one hit kill, but it turned me off so much after not having played the game for months and months and months, like wrestling with the controls and trying to remember how to play while, again, like a lizard spits on me and I die. I'm just like, okay. Like, there are dozens of great games out. I'm enjoying Wolfenstein. I'm enjoying all kinds of stuff. Like, so I was pretty content to put it down.
Yeah, I get that, but I don't know. I stuck with it. I retaught myself the controls. And
yeah, I think I'll probably, I'm sure. Like, it's my game of the year. It's one of the best games of this generation. So I'll pick it back up in 3 or 4 years, and then I'll probably just appreciate, like, that DLC will just be part of the game, right?
So. Yeah, that's true.
The DLC led me to an area that I'd just never seen before. I'd never even, I looked on my map and, my green line had gone around it. I'd never been there. It's like this beautiful hill, like a crag on the top, and, I was up there and, the sun was setting, and I was like, this game.
It's so deliberate, right? They deliberately take you into the DLC. Like, sure, maybe some players did run through there. I'm sure Andrew ran through there in his hunt for all 900 Koroks, but, they seem to have deliberately fleshed out areas that are easy to skip.
You think they have data? They're like, not very many players went here.
I think they can see where the shrines aren't.
I think they just
kind of put them in smart places.
Yeah. That's probably good.
And obviously it was built into the game of having that line that shows you every step you took with that DLC. Yeah. So I'm sure they have access to that.
Yeah. Well, in that line, I was sure if someone said, did you go to every portion of that map? I'm like, yeah, I absolutely went everywhere. But then once you see the line, there's huge areas that I just didn't ever go in.
Yeah. It's awesome. All right. This is Gab. He says, my name is Gab. And I've been listening to your podcast for about a year.
You don't think it's Gabe?
It's G-A-B.
All right.
So, I don't know.
It's bag backwards.
Yeah. Yep, that's true. From my 30-minute commute from Hertfordshire to Buckinghamshire in the UK.
Okay, I want to go to all these places people are writing from.
Everyone who's writing to us from exotic places, if you want to sponsor a live game scoop in your area.
I would just take a to-do list.
Let us know. Gab says, keep up the good scooping. Nintendo Switch. I want one. The whole world has adopted this clever little device. Yes, the whole world. So I don't doubt that 2018 will be filled with loads of games.
Well.
But if I were Nintendo, it's time to already be thinking of the successor. Mm. I say this because the disaster that was Wii U probably still gives Reggie some nightmares. And as the handheld factor is such a selling point, they cannot remove it from whatever comes next. My question is, do you think they will release a Switch 2? And A, what will they call it? If not a Switch 2. So hold on. Unpack it. Is the next Nintendo console a handheld TV machine hybrid?
Well, I don't know. I think the Switch, more so than other consoles, is really appropriate to get iterative, 3DS style. Like, they're not done. It's not like, okay, the 3DS, we did it. Like, I think we're going to see a Switch 1.1 and 1.2 that has a bigger battery life, maybe a bigger screen. They designed this device in order to iterate on it. But I know that's not answering his question. So I think we're not going to see a Switch 2 for a while. I think they're thinking about, how do we entice people that didn't spend $300 on a Switch to get the new slightly improved model?
I think also the sudden success of it in this first year, because it could have gone either way, especially given the Wii U, that it may have been more of a slow roll. But the fact that it's pretty much meeting the PS4 sales-wise, I feel like they very much, whenever their new console comes, might be a little more delayed because of that.
But I mean, it does, Gabs, the core of his question of where does Nintendo go from here, it's sort of interesting. Like, they're in such a wonderful spot to have had this huge success on their hands, but it does kind of box them in a little bit, like big picture wise. Like, what is Nintendo doing 6 years from now, 7 years from now? Do they go back to having a TV only system? Like, it's a nice problem to have, but it is sort of an existential issue that Nintendo will have to grapple with.
I think a lot depends on whether we have TVs in 7 years. Mm. Like, 7 years doesn't seem like that long of a time, but it can be a really long time if VR really takes off.
Yeah.
It can be a really long time if just your phone is doing basically all of your entertainment center work by the time, you know, the next Nintendo system comes out. Like, why? I still think it's crazy that I have 10 systems I'm running Netflix on when I could just set it down when I get home and my TV could just be running completely from my phone. And they did that. They're bridging the console version of that. Once we have Netflix on, it'll be even nicer. But, like, you know, having a portable thing that is all of your entertainment and your computer and all that stuff, like, that's where we're going. And Nintendo's, like, anticipating that a little bit.
Yeah. I think the Switch probably does represent the future of the company. I don't think they're going to have a standalone box that you plug into the back of your television. And the reason why is for, I don't know how long now, 20 years, Nintendo hasn't competed on a power, like a horsepower basis. Mm-hmm. Certainly since the Wii, you could argue back even since the N64 or GameCube. And they've always had, like, okay, the Wii is less powerful, but it's got these revolutionary motion controls. And that went over for people. Like, you know, 100 million Wiis were sold. And then the Wii U, okay, it's not as powerful, but it's got this tablet. And that didn't work. And now with the Switch, okay, we're once again not as powerful, but they have this other compelling reason to get the console.
Yeah.
And that's Nintendo. They are never going to have like a fork. They're always going to be behind Microsoft and Sony in terms of the pure horsepower of their consoles. So they have to have some other reason to get people on board.
I wonder if they'll stick with the name Switch. Mm. Is that a, you know, how long do they stick with that? Like,
they stuck with Wii for Wii U.
Yeah. And that was a huge debacle. So I think they wanted to not use the Wii name again, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. They use, so it's the Nintendo Entertainment System, Super Nintendo Entertainment System, Nintendo 64, and then they're like GameCube, and then Wii.
Yeah.
I mean, my real question is, like, are Microsoft and PlayStation going to make a Switch-like device?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something similar. It's, we'll see how popular it gets.
Well, it depends. I mean, they're also competing in the weird market of they also have to think about home video release, at least for now, while Blu-ray and even still DVDs are such a major part of their
and
market.
And we're making a transition to 4K right now.
Yeah.
So, like, they totally want to be behind that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Whereas Switch is less. That's not a priority for
Nintendo. We're going to feel a little bit weirder about Switch when it can't work on our 4K televisions.
Yeah.
But that's not everybody yet.
Yeah. That adoption rate also, like, obviously, we're in it. We see that every day, the 4K, but there's a large swath of both the US and just the world that hasn't even thought of adopting 4K.
Yeah. It's like when we came out around HDTVs, they're like, hey, most people don't have an HDTV. We're not making an HD system.
Yeah.
And that really ended up angering me. But in the beginning, I was like, yeah, it's a pretty good decision. I don't have an HDTV.
But by 2 or 3 years later, like, it really made that console age so faster than it would have otherwise. Yeah, I mean, the 4K thing is interesting. I don't actually know. I'd be interested to see stats on, like, adoption. I think it's still low-ish. But I do think it's going to be one of those things where if you get a new TV in a year or two, it's just going to be a 4K TV. Like, you know, the 1080p models are just going to go away.
Yeah.
I can't see Nintendo. They just haven't been in the business really ever of just here's a $400, $500 box that is really, really powerful and runs incredibly high-end games and you plug it into the back of your television. Like, they haven't done that since I've been working in the games industry.
Yeah.
So I can't possibly see them
going
back
to that. This is a fun year, though, because Mario and Zelda are graphically so competent that they could easily be a brand new PlayStation 4 or Xbox One release. And I'm not saying because of power. I'm saying, like, they're indistinguishable because of the styles they use.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's great.
I mean, they're absolutely gorgeous.
It won't be like that forever, though.
It's so wonderful, just as a Nintendo, lifelong Nintendo fan, to see them in the HD era, you know, with just Mario Kart is completely gorgeous and Mario Odyssey is completely gorgeous. And to me, those games look good enough. I don't need Nintendo games to look better than that. Like, I have, you know, Naughty Dog and these other developers I love, you know, pushing the envelope with stuff like Uncharted Lost Legacy. And, you know, they occupy different spaces for me.
Mm-hmm. A couple ideas that Gab has for what the next Nintendo console could be. He says it could be just a more powerful tablet with more Joy-Cons, meaning you're expanding the local multiplayer aspect.
Hmm.
What if there were like four Joy-Cons around it? I don't know. I guess that makes it more of an actual portable multiplayer gaming system.
they've also left themselves open, and they kind of hinted at it, but they haven't done anything yet, with the idea that those are detachable. You could put something else there.
Like, yep,
they
that's
can
true.
They can create something that is not just the Joy-Con as we know it, whether
fishing
it's a different
pole.
Exactly.
They
a tennis
put a fishing
racket
pole on there.
Tennis
yeah.
racket.
Or maybe yeah. you could also replace the center, right?
Yes.
So if you are going to get a more powerful system in the future, maybe you just get the tablet part of it, mm-hmm. and your pieces just slide in the side. Yeah. I mean, that's what like the Switch Lite is going to be like. You know, like
we'll get a tablet
it
only.
Has to be
a Switch Lite.
Oh yeah,
instead
it has
of a
to get
Switch
lighter.
XL.
Something like that will happen.
That's I think they'll expand the line. I absolutely think we'll get a tablet-only one where the Joy-Con maybe don't even detach, and it's just like a gaming tablet for, you know, $200. Like,
I mean,
it has
the TDS
happened,
that did the exact same thing. You know? Yep. It doesn't fold anymore.
Yep.
Everything's built in. It's so much cheaper.
Yep, I think we'll get a high-end one that's got a better screen and, you know, a bigger battery life, and we'll get a low-end one that, you know, makes some compromises to get the price
down.
Yeah,
the built-in one could easily have a smaller screen that's more compact, actually fit in your pocket, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And finally, Gab wonders if they would add VR, but Nintendo has not shown much interest in VR, and actually a lot of consumers have not shown much interest in VR.
It's true, but 7 years is a long time.
That's true.
And I don't know where VR will be. I don't know even what televisions will be like. I mean, we could have major changes in technology. For one thing, like I don't think the Switch will be able to handle, and maybe even not contemporary systems, leaps in AI. I've talked about this in GameScoop before. Like, not everything we talk about has to do with displays and sounds. Mm-hmm. Like, there are things that we can put in games 7 years from now, which will be, you know, lifelike or mysterious or interesting just because they have crazy AI that gets to know you and does terrifying Black Mirror things.
Yes.
Look for it.
Please be excited. This is Eric Rovtar. He says, with this being your last show before the holiday break, and with Christmas less than a week away, I wondered, what is the first gaming system and or game you asked for or got at Christmas or the holidays? I remember when my sister got an NES with a zapper and power pad.
Yeah.
That led to hours and hours of gameplay well beyond the NES's lifespan. We'd play when home from college for Thanksgiving and Christmas, each year needing to tap it a bit harder for it to read the cartridge.
Aww.
So what about you guys? Any fond holiday gaming gift memories? Thanks for all you do, and Merry Christmas.
I don't know about first, but to be on brand, I remember the Christmas I got Kingdom Hearts.
And that
I
was
got,
a Christmas
I got,
gift.
Yes, I got PS2 and Kingdom Hearts.
That have been your first game gift?
No, I got an N64 definitely for Christmas earlier. Mm. But what happened was, I remember I brought it upstairs to my room, plugged into the TV while my whole family was gathered downstairs, and I put in Kingdom Hearts and the opening theme song intro cinematic played, and I just kept hitting reset to watch it over and over. And I watched it like 20 times, and by the time I started playing, I was like, hey, dinner's ready. You have to actually come down. So I didn't get to play it till the next day.
Well, this is on PS2?
Yes. Yeah.
The PS2 had a reset button?
It was the eject and then the reset button.
Interesting.
Yeah,
the power was actually on the back.
And that's because it was like a CG intro?
Yeah, I loved that intro. And that's because really cool. Then it just entered you into the game, but I just wanted to keep rewatching that. Mm-hmm. That is like very vivid for me.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. How about you, Sam?
Oh, I definitely asked for an NES first, and it got I was living in Iowa at the time. I think my mom had said she went to the Toys R Us in Cedar Rapids, and they had one left, and it was the power pad one.
Mm.
She still went for it. And I remember, you know, the box very well, and my grandfather helping hook
it
up.
Was it
that
huge box?
Yeah, that one is like kind of long and square on both ends and then long.
Yeah.
And it has the power pad, and then it comes with World Class Track Meet, Duck Hunt, and Super Mario Brothers all in the same cartridge.
Nice.
And, you know, Super Mario Brothers is already super
hot
by that
time. One card, three games?
Yep.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And this is before Mario 2 and everything. So, like, Mario Brothers is still the most popular game on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then World Class Track Beat was, like, really funny. I don't know if you ever played that.
No, I haven't.
It's a big plastic pad you put on the ground, and you can kick two people, and they can stand next to each other, and they race in place for all these Olympic games.
Oh, wow.
That's okay. A harbinger of things to come with the Wii.
Yeah.
Many years later.
But it was just buttons, so there's nothing fancy about it, and it was so funny. You could just hop off of it, go on the ground,
use your hands
it was really fun. And the Duck Hunt, of course, was a blast too.
Duck Hunt's really fun.
That was an amazing gift. Then I remember opening my Game Boy 2 years later, and that was so awesome.
I love
that package. It has robot hands holding the Game Boy. So cool.
There's all these lasers flying around everywhere.
Yeah,
and then it came with Tetris.
Yeah.
Definitely getting the NES for me was also like a key memory from my childhood.
And no zapper with yours, right?
No, I got the zapper because I got it like 86.
Orange or gray?
First year, gray. It was the first year that it went wide. In 85, I think they test marketed it in New York and Los Angeles. 86 was the first year it was available nationwide. I was the first kid in my school to have this new video game console. And so, yeah, it came with Rob the Robot, Zapper, Duck Hunt, and Gyromite.
Oh, you had that kit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is the original, like, power set or whatever. And then I also got Super Mario Brothers, which must have been separate.
I can't believe you had Rob. That's so cool.
Yeah. Had Rob. Used it. I'm sure I used it once or twice. And think, well, this
I found that box pretty recently, the full Rob box. I should bring it in. It's so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
It has, like, really it's exciting. It's Rob's face over one side of the box. So it's like, you don't even see the system. Wow. It's just the big robot face.
The story is well documented. It's because no retailers were interested in stocking video game consoles after the video game market crash. Mm-hmm. So the whole reason Nintendo put Rob in there and on the box is to pitch it as a toy instead of a video game system.
So you had to buy Super Mario Brothers separately?
I got it as a Christmas gift. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it must have been separate because I don't think it was included in the box at that time.
Yeah. And then Gyromite and Duck Hunt that came with that,
yeah,
they were on separate cartridges.
Yep. Mm. Yep. They're each their own cartridge. Mm. Yeah. It was amazing.
That is amazing.
So good. And the whole reason I wanted that is because I would go to Showbiz Pizza, which is what we had instead of Chuck E. Cheese. Mm-hmm. And one day there was Super Mario Brothers there in the arcade.
Yeah,
I thought that game really cool. was amazing. And then I was watching cartoons, and there was a commercial for Super Mario Brothers that you could play at home.
It was
the exact
same,
arcade game. I was like, thing, yeah. I have to have this. And I got it for Christmas that year. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in my 30s, right? And so for a long, long time, you know, I won a game, and I just buy the game, play the game. And so it's funny to reorient yourself back to the days when, like, Christmas and your birthday were, like, the lifeblood of what mm-hmm. I presume is, you know, a shared passion for all of us. And, yeah. like, it's the most obvious thing in the world, but you had to wait, right? Like, a game came out, and it's like, it's August. I have to wait till Christmas to get, yeah. and hopefully, you know, Grandma usually got me what I wanted, but, like, yeah. hopefully get the thing that you asked for. Yeah. So my life is littered with, you know, opening, like, you have the box, and you have to wait for your whole family to open presents until you're allowed to make your escape and go play it. The NES was a family gift, actually. That wasn't a gift mm-hmm. just for me, but it sort of became mine over time. Sure. I'm the one that took it over. And so, yeah, you know, Mario 3 and then up through, I was a Genesis kid, and like Vector Man and Vector Man 2, I remember being big deals for me. Yeah.
Really? It's Christmas gifts? That's so
yeah.
cool. I never thought of Vector Man that way.
And the big one, you know, all the way up through even GameCube when I was 15 or 16 was probably the last one where, you know, I got Pikmin, mm-hmm. got Smash. But the big one was the N64. Like, that yeah. was the one where that leap from 16-bit to 32-bit and, you know, 3D, you know, like the PS1 launched without analog controls. Like, it took 3D a while for people, you know, game developers and consumers to kind of figure it out. And that game felt so magical. And my parents
Mario 64.
Yeah. And my parents weren't together, and I used to drag the N64 back and forth between their houses when I would go back and forth between houses. Like, I was unwilling to leave it, you know, if I was going to spend some time somewhere else. And that in particular, like, that couple of years of, like, you know, Mario and Shadows of the Empire and then Ocarina of Time and GoldenEye were, like, peak. It was like that perfect storm of, like, I'm adult enough to you know, but I don't have any adult responsibilities.
Yeah.
And so that was like
high school's life.
Yeah, that was like, you know, late middle school, early high school. Yeah, it was a big deal for all of us in 64 games, and I think cemented, like, why I'm doing the job I'm doing today. Is like,
isn't it funny to think of your parents doing the research about video games?
I think they just bought what I told them to.
Oh, really? I think they do. Like, well, Kingdom Hearts is really specific.
Well, right? That was because there was during like dinner time when we would watch TV sometimes, there was an ad that would play for Kingdom Hearts. And I was like, I need this game.
Yeah.
But most of the research for my parents, like, I inherited my mom's NES and her Game Boy and all of that. So she had a pretty deep knowledge of it.
Like, that's,
so
I think that's
she
really
just like
cool.
understood, oh yeah, that I get what that game is.
Yeah,
my,
yeah.
My mom played a lot of Tetris too. And that was the last video game. I mean, she plays like iPad games now, but like an actual video game, like after dinner, she'd go down to the basement and just be addicted to Tetris, you know, for a long, long time.
I remember one Christmas I got a Game Genie for NES. And I had never heard of it because I only read Nintendo Power, obviously not covering the game. But my mom, like, explained it to me when I opened it. And she's like, this, like, well, you know, it gives you all these options with your old games. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea. And I was like, how does my mom know about this?
That's so cool.
And then I think it was because of, like, NPR or something. And, like, whatever the case, she knew all about it. And then for my parents, it was like, this is a good reason for you. And I think they pitched it to parents this way.
Yeah. Extend the life of your existing games.
Isn't that smart?
Yeah.
And they like totally picked up on that, and it was absolutely accurate.
That's interesting.
Just adding Moon Jump to Super Mario Brothers and stuff is like I was all back in it, you know.
Yeah, no, that's interesting because my mom absolutely would complain every time. Why do you need a new system? You already have an old system. The new system doesn't play your old games,
dude. No, my parents drove her crazy. Freaked out when they heard that the new systems don't play your old games.
Yeah,
like I couldn't get one because of that.
Oh wow.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a big thing,
and it was dumb.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's a bad thing they did.
All right, our final email comes from Robbie, the Confused Gamer. He says, whenever a video game gives me the option to create my own character from the ground up, I would always create a character of a differing gender and race to that of my own. Mm. I'm a white guy. I will usually take any opportunity to experience a game from the point of view of characters with differing perspectives from mine. Until I realized that in games with a create a character system, like Skyrim, The Division, Fallout, or even PUBG, your create a character has no perspective of their own. Having very little characterization besides what you, the player, conjure up, the character is really just a vessel for you to navigate the world with. How that character looks doesn't usually alter the way the character interacts with the world. So should my created vessel just represent me? Is it wrong of me to create a character of another race or gender? Am I somehow misrepresenting marginalized people, or am I just overthinking this? What do y'all think about when creating characters?
I actually really like this question.
Yeah, I had never thought of that. It's true. It's like modern character creators do usually give the options to create a wide variety of different races, genders. But yeah, it's like it doesn't change that character's experience in the world, right?
Unless it does, like Mass Effect or something.
Well, yeah, or like most RPGs where sometimes romance options are different or things like
that. Romance options.
Yeah, it's still pretty limited. In Mass Effect, it just determines whether you're a man or a woman, you're male or female, right?
No, it does change. It determines who you can date.
Because
some characters are straight and some are gay.
That's what I'm saying. It just determines your...
So like, but like if you choose a female character, there's three or four male characters that you wouldn't be able to romance, like for instance.
Yeah, but like I said, like you're not really experiencing the Mass Effect universe as a woman, though, as a woman would experience real life, you know, as a white male.
Yeah,
you're not all of a sudden now experiencing the world as a woman.
It's not a massive shift where every character is addressing you in a different way, necessarily, is what you're saying.
I mean, I've actually have thought about this. I also, when I'm given the option, almost always play a game as a woman, and it dates back to World of Warcraft because I wanted to be a mage, and all the male avatars in World of Warcraft are the character models used to look dopey and derpy, and like they have these huge, thick, muscly necks, and like none of them looked right for mages. They only look like warriors. And so I rolled a woman in that game just because it seemed to fit better with like, you know, more of a magic user class. And then that tradition just carried over. Like now I just always do it. But it gets weird in like role-playing games with romance options because I'm playing as a woman just because of tradition, because I always do. But I'm still mostly making the choices that I would make, that Justin would make, you know, if he were that character. So I still want to only romance women.
Yeah.
And so I end up only doing like lesbian romances, but I'm not deliberately trying to like I think now that I talk about this out loud, if it's a game where, you know, there's actual role-playing choices to make based off the character you are, I should probably play them more like myself because I'm making those choices that I would make. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, oh, my character would do this, so that's the choice I'll make. I'm just making the choice I would make. Mm-hmm. So maybe I do, in those types of games, need to make a character like myself.
I actually tend to stick with the default character.
Really?
Yeah, just because I do take it as me playing the game. Like the choices I'm making are always me, so what the character looks like or does doesn't really matter to me as much. But I don't see anything wrong with wanting to choose to play as whatever race, gender, alien, whatever it may be, the options are. I think that's a totally reasonable way to approach those games.
Yeah, like Skyrim lets you play as a lizard or a cat or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I almost always play as a woman because my wife likes to design my characters. Okay. She's not much of a gamer. She has a casual interest in it, but it's fun for her to design the character, and she always tries to make a really pretty woman. That's her goal. I'm going to make the prettiest female character that I can.
What's her favorite character creator?
Well, she really likes Saints Row, because that lets you get... actually pretty deep. Saints Row the Third had a very deep character creator in there. Funny. And she liked the Dragon Age Inquisition one, too.
That one's also pretty good.
Yeah. But I don't know. Is there an ethical consideration to be given when creating a character in a game?
As long as you're having fun.
That's what I think, you know? It's just, it doesn't change.
I mean, I also...
Your character is presumably going to be the hero of the story, and heroism looks good on everyone, right?
Unless it's GTA.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, in multiplayer games, you know, again, like going back to the WoW example, you know, half the people running around that game world are women, and no one really thinks that half the actual people behind the computer monitor are women, although that game does have a much higher female audience than, you know, a typical game. But even so, I don't think, like... I don't think there's any expectation, just the way that gaming is still fairly gendered, that, you know, if you kill a female avatar in PUBG, that you would assume... I don't assume that that's a woman playing the game.
That's interesting, too.
Yeah, in multiplayer.
Yeah,
because especially in like games like Battlefront, where there's heroes, like...
Yeah.
You are either a woman or a man. You don't really choose that because of that. You choose it because of the
I've never seen a lady Wookiee.
No, but Leia's in it.
Well, I'm just making an unrelated statement. It just popped into my head.
You've seen Lady Wookiee in the Star Wars Christmas special.
And
holiday special.
There are female Lady Wookiees in the Old Republic.
Is that true?
Yeah, but they go the whole Wookiee planet there, right?
Kashyyyk.
Kashyyyk, yeah.
Yeah, that, you also do that in The Force Unleashed 2. You go there as Darth Vader in the very first level, and you wreck Kashyyyk.
You're just
going through these wooden Wookiee dwellings and just completely force destroying them.
I also, you know, I would say, Robbie, don't worry about it too much. I like the variety. You know, it's like I'm gonna play PUBG as, you know, a person of color, you know, with a huge afro. I'm gonna play this game as this kind of person. I'm gonna play this game as an alien. This one, I'm gonna be me. Like, it's nice to have. You know, you played, what was it, Saints Row, as a crazy blue guy?
Yeah, probably. Like crazy blue woman, but
yeah, and just like, you know, I don't know, just kind of think about it that way. Just like each game is just a menu of like, I want to do this for the next, you know, 20 hours.
All right, before we go on our break, before we play 20 questions for the last time in 2017, what do we plan on playing over our breaks? You're gonna play
Love Nikki the fashion game?
Love Nikki the fashion game?
Yeah, Miranda really loved that fashion game, so I downloaded it and checked it out. I don't know. That's a good question. I haven't really picked, like, you're totally right that this is going to be my Christmas break game this year, but I've been so busy with our Best of Awards and other stuff that I haven't given it much thought. I was playing through Wolf 1 to prep for Wolf 2, so maybe I'll finally just, you know, blast through that over the holiday break.
Yeah, yeah. I still need to finish Wolfenstein 2 myself. And then there's all, you know, I still have moons to find in Mario. The Zelda DLC is really fun. I haven't beaten Battle Chef Brigade yet, although I think I'm near the end there. So
I've been playing Magnus Opum, Opus Magnum. Goodness gracious.
Magnum.
You know, I've ranted before about how much I love Space Kim and all the games from Zachtronics, that developer, and he's got a new one out that's his most successful or most accessible and polished puzzle game yet, and it's on. I think it's on iPad, but I'm playing it on PC, and I will certainly spend some more time with that. One of the best puzzle games probably ever.
Ever?
Yeah.
It's a Tetris.
Yeah.
Wow. And it's called Opus Magnum?
Yeah, I got it right the second time. Okay.
Mopus Magnum.
It's no Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine.
That's true.
We'll have to stand in for it.
What is? Sam, what are you going to play over the break?
I started Ukulele, so I'm going to keep playing that on Switch.
What's your first impression of that?
I am, like, so attracted to the sounds and sights in that game.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll be like the gameplay so much, but oh my gosh, I'm so nostalgic for it. It was making me so happy, and I loved playing it. But yeah, I don't know. Now I'm in quests. I'm like, I just played Mario. Like, this doesn't feel as good. So.
Yeah.
I love the music, but I was explaining the other day, the game just feels cheap to me. Like the camera and the movement, and like it doesn't feel very polished. Doesn't feel like a real AAA video game.
It's a bummer.
I was disappointed.
I remember you saying that, and I'll look out for that a little bit more. I didn't feel that myself.
Okay.
I also know that team. I've played Banjo-Kazooie and Tui a lot and Conker, and like I know what those games feel like, and I see what they're going for really clearly.
Yeah.
And I love it. It makes me so nostalgic and happy to play it. But I'll play that in Stardew Valley and definitely the Zelda DLC.
Yeah,
I'm right in the middle of that. I played hours of that already.
Yeah. Jonathan?
For me, it's a cleanup of a few smaller games that I missed this year and also finishing Persona, which is my game of the year. I haven't finished it because it is 90-100 hours long, but I love it. 90-100,000.
It's getting bigger.
Yeah, I just started Gorogoa.
Gorogoa.
It's a new puzzle game. Yeah.
It's only an hour long, so.
Yeah, so I will probably finish today. But it's beautiful and gorgeous, and I love it so far. But I want to also do Night in the Woods and Little Nightmares. Which,
I need to play that too.
Yeah, both Miranda and Chloe.
I do not have
Chloe.
Enough nice things to say about Night in the Woods.
I can't wait to play it.
I played about an hour of that game, but I want to play more.
I wasn't really that wild about Oxenfree or Firewatch or any of the sort of other walkie-talkie games. And Night in the Woods is the one that I'm like, oh, man, that's the one to really get its hooks into me.
I could have worked it in. That's a really good point. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I have a good goal.
There was just they sent out a blast from the PlayStation Store if you're signed up to get a 20% off code for the store. So I was like, oh, okay, Night in the Woods it is then. Okay.
What did you just pull out of your pocket?
I pulled out a little note that I received in the mail, along with another little clicker. This is the second one I've received in the mail. This is intended for counting Video Game 20 questions.
Does it have a window on it?
Yeah. So this comes from Kenton in Michigan, and he says, "Hi, Damon. I've been enjoying the show for years since I got back into gaming. My favorite segment is 20 questions. Every episode, I think you should have one of these." And that's kind of you. You know, like I said, someone else sent me this before, and I used it. And I got a lot of feedback that people missed the fingers. People have come to expect me to be counting questions on my fingers.
Well, didn't your wife say that counting on your fingers looks stupid, too, so you need to do this?
I'm sorry?
Didn't your wife say at one point that counting on your fingers looked dumb, so you need to do this?
Yeah, but then the viewers, the people that really matter at this show, they like me counting on my fingers.
Game scoop, not wife scoop.
Yeah.
You look dumb, dude.
Love you.
So, Kenton, for you, since you were kind enough to send me this, I'll use this one time, and then in the new year, 2018, I'll probably go back to counting on my fingers.
We can see how we feel.
Yeah.
And we set up a new counter cam just for this. You know about that, right, CJ?
Yeah. Let's bring up the counter cam.
he's frantically pressing.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
No. Kenton also gives us our 20 questions suggestion this week. Let the questioning begin.
Okay. Does your character wear a hat?
Does your character wear a hat?
Damon.
I really do need to start looking
at that. Because you always look up the hands question and then you
I'm going to say, okay, so first I'll count your question. I'm going to say yes, but it might be controversial.
What?
Are you going to have to ask the functional hat question?
No, I don't want to get into the functional hat question.
Yes, but it
again.
Might be controversial.
That makes me think of one immediate thing, but I don't want to.
Is it Captain Toad?
That was exactly what I thought. Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah, because it would be controversial. I mean, yeah.
Because he has a hat and the
and the head.
And the head.
But some people don't want to believe that.
There's some mixed canon about whether the toad is whether is the mushroom part of his head or is it a hat?
Yeah, is there a vascular system inside there carrying blood throughout his mushroom head?
All right, let's move on.
Sam here.
What we know so far is that I think it's probably worth.
Is this from before 1990?
Was this released before the year 1990? Mm-hmm. No.
Okay.
Sounds like it came out in 1990.
Was this released before the year 2000?
Yes.
Okay.
Was this released on the 16-bit consoles?
No.
So it's.
You're liking the clicker.
You're coming around on the clicker.
Yeah. It's got a whole new dimension. Tower.
So that means, Sam, I think you're probably right. I think it's probably a late 8-bit game, but we can.
It
was not 16-bit.
I love that.
So it's either later or earlier. Obviously. I don't know why.
It's either later or it can't be right on the dot. Is this a. Was this on a Nintendo system?
Yes.
Okay.
That's 5.
So you're thinking it was earlier. My brain immediately went to like N64.
Go for it.
It was on a Nintendo system.
It's not on Super Nintendo.
No.
So it's either on Game Boy, Game Boy Advance, Nintendo 64, Virtual Boy.
Or NES.
Or NES.
Was this a handheld game?
No.
Okay.
Was this an NES game?
No.
So that's the N64.
Is this a 3D game?
Yes.
Okay.
That would have...
You like the clicker.
All the questions
What question are we on?
You've asked 8 questions so far.
N64 game.
Was this game developed by Nintendo?
No.
Okay.
What is it? Maybe it was published by Nintendo.
Nah.
I
mean, it does, I don't think you would do it 2 weeks in a row, but it was it could be like a Pokemon Snap situation.
Yeah, totally. Was this critically acclaimed?
Critically acclaimed. Give me a bar for like what would what
do
score
you know the score?
What score would a game have to get in your eyes for it to be critically
eight or better?
Eight or better. Then
that's what I would have said too.
Mm-hmm. It would be right around the low end of that
critically acclaimed.
Of that of critically acclaimed. So moderate, maybe moderately critically
reviewed.
Okay. Damon, clarifying question.
Yeah,
he clicked too for that too.
After all that debate,
I said, did Nintendo develop this game? Would you have counted rare games in that bucket?
I would. If this game were developed by Rare, and you asked me, did Nintendo develop this game? I would have said no.
Okay,
but Nintendo owned Rare. Nintendo Rare was Nintendo.
No, yeah. I agree. I can see where David's coming from. Yeah, there, but it's a good way to probe
Nintendo
his attitude towards
develops
this game.
Games on its own.
Did Nintendo make Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze?
Wait, I don't know.
Retro that made that retro. Game. Did Nintendo make like Metroid
if,
Prime?
If Retro developed Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, and you asked me the question, did Nintendo make this game? I would say no.
I protest.
So, do you just want to ask Rare then?
Yeah, well, we've asked 10 questions, by the way. So
I don't know.
We're halfway there.
Is this, kind of.
Does this game have a third-person camera?
So you've already asked if it's a 3D game.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you're asking if it has a third-person camera. Yes.
Because there's first
it's not GoldenEye or Perfect Dark.
Or a puzzle game.
Yeah.
Or a puzzle game. I don't understand what perspective puzzle games are played from.
That's a good point. We should bring back the Mario Dr. Mario debate right now.
Goodness gracious.
I'll just ask, is this game developed by Rare?
Yes.
Okay. Oh! Yeah.
Goodness.
Uh-huh. So
wow, well,
the hat is controversial, so
how, why Conker has an eye patch.
Yeah. Hats and eye patches.
Well, and as we've established, bandanas are just a high score.
A bandana could be a low hat.
Crunty wears a hat in Banjo.
It's yeah, but you true. Don't play as Crunty.
I think he's thinking of Kazooie as the hat.
Oh. But she's in the
Kazooie's
backpack.
Kazooie's in the backpack.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, knowing it's a rare game, I mean, there's still
there's a
chance.
Backpack, a hat.
So there's Jet Force Gemini.
Yep.
There's Blast Corps. I'm just trying to think of the lesser known
is
rare games.
Is Blast Corps rare?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And all
right. Well, then there's Donkey Kong
and
Banjo.
Donkey Kong 64.
Banjo 2 is 2000s though, so it can't be that.
Okay. Mm, good point. Ooh. So it's got to be early-ish rare.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even
and
know.
Then, and then it can't be Conker either.
Oh, was that too late? You think?
2000s.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you play as a bear?
No.
Okay.
Except for you do know that one of the drivers in Blast Corps is a bear. No, I'm just joking.
So what does that leave us with? From
Blast Corps, Jet Force Gemini, and it can't be GoldenEye or Perfect Dark. So.
Okay.
Is Silicon Valley rare?
No, that was actually the GTA that was DMA designed.
That's right.
Before they redesigned.
I thought Blast Corps was too.
I think Blast Corps is rare. I mean, I don't know. Could be wrong. But
is this a sci-fi game?
Yes.
It's Jet Force Gemini.
Do you play, aren't you like weird rabbits in that game?
No, you're
twins. Rescuing them. You're the
You rescue Ewoks.
Do you play as a set of twins rescuing weird rabbit people in this game?
Yes.
It's Jet Force
we'll
Gemini.
Just leave it at that. Yeah.
Would you like to make your guess?
Yeah,
it's Jet Force Gemini.
It is Jet Force Gemini.
That was a good one.
So the hat thing, it takes place in like outer space, so I assume they're wearing protective headgear, like a space suit.
Space helmets.
Okay. Space helmet.
That is controversial. Sure.
Where did I replay? Man, I know I talk about this a lot on Scoop, but I'm really fascinated by the games that were, like, there's two games. They're excellent when they come out. And then one is excellent a decade later, and then one's crap a decade later. And it's not the crap game's fault. They just age differently. Jet Force Gemini is so awful. I played it in the Rare Replay.
Yeah.
And it is, I'm like, man, I love this game. Like, I put it right up there with the other Rare classics at the time. I couldn't play it. Ugh.
No, so
I was so disappointed.
The critically acclaimed question. I feel like that was like a sevens game.
Seven or eight,
people probably gave it. IGN probably gave it a high seven or an eight.
Yeah.
I don't really remember.
I think you nailed that. We probably gave it a nine, though.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
There's multiplayer in that game.
Yeah.
And you can, I think in the multiplayer, you can play as the dog.
Okay. Isn't there something weird where the camera only moves on the X axis? It like doesn't move on the Y axis?
We gave it an 8.1.
8.1.
Matt Casamassina.
So you're right.
Nailed it, yeah. Maybe I'm incorrect about that, but I have that memory.
I don't know. I remember also you could give the controller to a second person, and you have this like kind of droid that hovers around you, and they can just kind of like zap.
On the N64, that game ran at like 11 frames per second. So it's like even fixing that in Rare Replay, I still
did they fix that in Rare Replay?
Yeah,
I want to play that again.
Yeah, oh, plus, yeah. I kind of want to play it too.
I played multiplayer so much in that game.
I mean, I encourage you to fire it up. GoldenEye is the same way. You can't play it, man.
Yeah, original GoldenEye.
I also don't know if Blast Corps is rare. We have to look that up.
Yeah, I'll check.
I don't remember if that was actually rare or not.
I think it's the same people that did Silicon.
You think it's DMA?
Yeah.
You might be right.
Jet Force Gemini was like, you know, a highly anticipated game along with, you know, GoldenEye and Banjo-Kazooie and like all of those big games coming from Rare. It was Rare. Blast Corps is Rare.
Yep.
Okay. Is Blast Corps, I guess Blast Corps is probably in Rare Replay, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Blast Corps holds up much better than Jet Force Gemini.
Never played that one.
Dude, it gets so hard. It starts out, I've never seen a game, like for the first 6 or 8 missions, you're like, this game's great. Why don't people talk about this game more? Then you get to the midpoint and you're like, oh, this is impossible. Like it requires like pinpoint precision.
Yeah.
Jet Force shooting?
Just like the way each vehicle is different and like.
Oh no, Blast Corps.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then did Rare do Star Fox Adventures?
Mm-hmm.
That was Rare also.
Yeah. Yeah, that was for GameCube though.
Yeah, for GameCube, yeah. But I'm trying to think of the Rare misses.
Started as Dinosaur Planet. I mean, they started to miss. Yeah.
They got more common, am I right?
Do you remember? It was like the biggest controversy.
That's so mean.
The Rare misses got more common.
Got more. Oh, I thought you said more coming.
Yeah,
so the upcoming Rare games. I was like, but Sea of Thieves look cool.
The Rare misses got more common.
That's true.
It was like
connectables.
Play on words.
It was like a top 10 controversy when Nintendo sold Rare, but they obviously like Nintendo saw something that we didn't.
They're like grabbed by Ghoulies.
Well, they had like
they didn't sell Rare for a long time until after Grabbed by the Ghoulies.
I don't think so. I think that was their next game, wasn't it?
What that was like their first Microsoft game.
I think so.
Yep, and then Conker Reloaded, and then Banjo-Kazooie, Nuts and Bolts, and Connectimals.
I don't know the exact timeline, but Grabbed by the Ghoulies was same generation. That was Xbox, and they released Star Fox Adventures on GameCube.
Banjo-Kazooie, Nuts and Bolts, underrated,
yeah.
I think. I liked that game a lot.
I did, too. I had a lot of fun. I can't beat one thing in it, so I could never get past it. Wow. But I love the open areas and stuff in it. I thought they were really good.
Yeah, and the building different machines, all these different parts.
Yeah.
I thought that was really fun.
Really clever.
It's also in Rare Replay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Rare Replay has everything.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It has all those old Rare computer games that I've never played.
Saber Wolf and all those weird games.
Is it a Viva Piñata?
It does. And Viva Trouble in Paradise.
Yeah.
That's the DS one?
No, it's a sequel, but it's like sequel/pseudo-remake. Like it's basically like a 1.5 version of Viva Piñata. It like completely replaces the original.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us, that is all the scoops that we have for you this year. Thank you for joining us all year long. And hey, let's do it all again next year. Everybody have very safe and happy holidays, wherever you are, whatever you're celebrating. Play some really fun games. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Jonathan. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
I shook you in my dream as hard as I could stand. When I stopped, you fell away, pockets full of sand. Waking up a world away, cutting through the air. 7,000 miles to kill, I'll see you when I'm there. Just look into my eyes, you're watching it decay.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.